Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just to remind how to join us, we have a talk guest every Thursday starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You either can join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk's website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702, or you can just search for SFU On Call, and you will find us there. But if you want the best experience when it comes to watching and listening to this podcast, and when it's recorded live, I say go over to twitch.tv/SFU On Call, and you will find us there. You'll be able to join the chat room, have good old time over there. And with that, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can. Sfuoncall also there. Also, I have a personal account called Paul Franz. Not very active lately. And at the moment, my third party with a Twitter client died. So not sure if I'm going to be able to post there for a while. And lastly, Franz Games. And of course, if you need this talk, it gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week. That is, increased cost of pure mini and mini parts is forced ADB to increase the price on those, the minis that use pewter. And also the mini parts they use pewter, which is usually the stands. So just a warning when it comes to that. They had not raised it for, I think I saw someone post, and it was like around 9 years. You know, so it's been a while. So it's time to raise the prices. And of course, AB is still working on FedCom Gunboats Attack. Which is interesting because I just looked at the product update list, and they said, oh, the next one's going to be Fighters Attacked. Well, they changed their mind. So obviously, it's Gunboats Attacked. Of course, Fighters Attacked was also supposed to be like 2015. So it's a little delayed. Moving on and forward to SFB Online Tournament. So have the Sapphire Star Crown Tournament number 2. Being starting because of the clay itself. Not much going on there. I did do work on a little bit of an issue with the FedCom side. I still need to add a little more code because I feel pretty confident in saying is the problem why the you can't fire, but there's some other things based on that, why that's causing an issue. And I need to find out a little more information about it. And hopefully next time it happens, I'll have more details in the logs. Okay, moving onward and forward to the library. Nothing's been updated on the FedCom or SFB library, though seems like Sebastian did email me saying there is a possible problem with the Romulan KEX, because it does not seem like it is currently being marked or labeled as an X ship, and therefore things like the batteries don't get marked as being X ship batteries. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, Justin, one of all Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, we have Dave in the chat room. And I got to also have Doug. Sorry, I was...
Hi.
Just knows I had a little bit of feedback. Well, not feedback. Echo, because I had my iPad going. And unfortunately, I forgot to mute that at the beginning. But anyway! And of course, really, Kitty? Really? Right now he's sitting right over here. So if you see him climb on top of me, you'll know why. But in the meantime, one thing I was thinking about this, especially given my experience with this past weekend, which was this weekend. This past weekend, I actually got to play a few games. The one game that I had planned on, which went down the tubes, which was because Barry had to work this weekend, so I couldn't play SFB. But shocking to me, and I do mean shocked, is that someone came to the convention explicit. Yes, there's the cat. Explicitly to play Federation Commander because he wanted a demo. It's like, okay, yeah. I put up a schedule, but invariably no one shows up. he showed up. It's like, okay, well, give me a sec.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, to say the very least, I was a bit unprepared. Really, Cat.
You were surprised.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was very surprised. And I apologize to, I forget the guy's name, but I don't even remember. I asked him for his name. You got his name. I did. Hold on for a moment. Kitty? Sorry. He's laying really uncomfortably, and I cannot sit here and talk while he's laying like that. But anyhow, so it made me realize, well, the first thing I got to do is I have to be more prepared for next time. So one thing I did was after I got home on Monday, I got home Sunday night, but I didn't do anything until Monday. Monday, I sat and I organized all of my cards. I also placed an order for around, I'm thinking about this for a moment, like 6 or 7 booster packs, of cards I realized I'm missing cards. They don't have cards that I really should have. Obviously, I'm looking at some of these scenarios, and some of these scenarios require multiple ships of a certain type. There's actually one I saw, which was kind of a cool scenario, which I wouldn't mind playing. But I think I'm going to see if I can get a scenario for next time. I would love to at least try this, which is the whole idea. Remote goes around a very simple scenario. And one that people can drop in, drop out, whatever. And it's very attuned to that. Which is, I want to put a star base in the middle of a board. And then on that board, then I'm going to give every single person I'm thinking Klingon at the moment. Or see if I can come up with an even simpler ship. Because I want a ship that people can play that's really simple. Which means, in my mind, to boil it down to the simplest way of playing Federation Commander is this. You got to pick a ship. Yeah, the king thinks he's a co-host. But a ship that has single turn arming weapons. Light disruptors. Another one I'm thinking Klingon just because people know Klingons. So it's familiar. It's they look at it, they'll it's recognizable. And that's what's the scenario that we played against with this guy with the demo, which is I played the Federation because I had the 2-turn arming weapons and he had the Klingons. So single turn arming weapons made things much simpler. Actually, this guy, the great thing about this guy was this. And I'm shocked. I'm really shocked at how much he knew. That's because of he told me he's one of those gamers who reads through the all of the rules and then will play the rules based on that. And he really didn't get much to play. He didn't get, I think he got to play one time against a friend of his. And that, you know, to play Starfleet battles, and then they never played again. And that's why he wanted to know about Federation Commander. So, you know, teaching him how to play Federation Commander was a lot easier because he already understood some of the concepts when it comes to Starfleet battles. For example, turn modes. He understood the idea of turn modes, i.e., that if you move, you know, if you're moving speed like 16, you have a turn mode of 3. Not the turn mode of the ship, the turn mode that you're at that time for what speed you're going at. In the case of like speed 16, his ship had a turn mode of 3, so that he had to go forward 3 hexes before he can turn. And the one thing I had to introduce to him, only one of the, so he understood that. He understood the idea of arcs, which so, you know, I just gave him a quick reviewer session on arcs.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Hmm?
Hold on. But, you know, Mickey, I'll let you talk in just a moment. But, so he understood those things. And he understood, so the only thing that we had to go through is we had to go through energy allocation, you know, quote-unquote energy allocation, how to do that. That's the one thing I was not as quite as prepared for as I needed to be, which is so we had to use China markers to mark how much power. Because normally when people play Federation Commander, what they do is they use paperclips. Paperclips on the ship cards to denote how much power you have, because you can just slide it up and down and you don't have to keep on erasing it, erasing it, you know, writing it down and erasing it and all that kind of thing every time you change it. But, you know, that it worked out fine. And then, of course, the last thing that I definitely told me I was completely unprepared is that I thought I had one of these, but I couldn't find it anywhere, which was a impulse sheet. One that has all of them, and also a master weapons chart, so that we didn't have to look at the weapons. What we had to do is we had to actually look up the rules in the rule book and look up what was the chart for that weapon. So, you know, it worked out. We got to play. It took us a nice 3 hours. Big surprise for a one-on-one duel. We actually completed. It basically blew me up. I did a mistake at the end, but at the same time, the way I was, I had like half my power left, half my weapons left. He had a lot more power, a lot more weapons, so I was kind of dead. And the reason why I turned into him was purely to, obviously Mickey didn't want to stick around for me to get to him. Purely for, because I wanted to get on his down shield, which is shield number one. The problem with that is that he got into range zero, and with range zero, his disruptors automatically hit. Fortunately, he couldn't overload all of his disruptors. He didn't have enough power. And, you know, then you have the phasers at range one, especially the phaser one. So it's like, yeah, it's kind of messy. He did like, 60 internals. And I said, look at this ship. Look at this ship. I don't have that many boxes to. At that point, I conceded. So. So it was fun. But as I said, I was kind of unprepared. So what I'd like to do for next time, I still got
this.
It's a big vinyl. For those, sorry, for those of you not on the video, that what I showed was a ChessX vinyl map. What I want to do, and I'm hoping to do, is get a few miniatures. I'm thinking maybe six Klingon miniatures. And then in the middle of the board, I want to have a starbase miniature. So the idea is that all of these ships are going to come and attack the poor, defenseless starbase, and see how long the starbase can last until you blow it up. Excuse me. See if I can do this. I'm hoping I should be able to.
Oh, here's a quick question for you.
Shoot.
Is there an equivalent of the captain's game or scenario for that?
You mean for like a campaign?
Yeah, where you round robin the whole thing. And you could try out different things at different races in different scenarios.
Mm-hmm. I would love to do that, but the problem is I don't think. We have for that scenario, we need at the very least, we need the whole weekend to play it out. Number one, two, we need at least around six people to play Federation Commander to be able to have a decent chance of playing it to at least a conclusion. So, okay, where is he? Is he still there? No, he's not. He's gone. Big surprise.
That's just a thought.
Oh, understood. Understood. Doug, I know what you want.
Oh, look.
And what you want, we can't have at the moment. Because I know what you'd want. What you want is to have a nice big, a tournament at Gamers of Winter and have people playing Starfleet Battles or even Federation Commander in a tournament mode. Where you have a lot of people playing it, on all the tables that we have. I know that's your desire, and I would love to have that too. But I'm realistic, because most of the people, one that come to that, don't play SFB. They're not into tactical board games. We had a few this time, that were more apt to play tactical board games. Which was great, the guy came over and said, basically wanted to know if I wanted to play another game. And I went, no, because at that point my brain was fried. I hadn't played a Federation Commander or SFB game for a while. And, 3 hours of both thinking about tactics and how to get around and actually attack them, to just teaching them the game, it was, hard. But anyway, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm thinking of that one scenario. Because that one scenario, at the very least, I can have it running the whole weekend. People can come.
Oh, shoot, I got a...
People can come, people can go, and no problem. And if there's no one available to play, we can still leave it up as kind of a piece to attract people. That's why I want the miniatures, because the miniatures attract people.
Yes, they do. Here's a thought. Why not have the Grand Prix Grand Prix setup.
Mm-hmm.
And basically everybody plays the Klingon, and, you know, it could be like the Academy training grounds. Whoever makes it all the way around and maybe makes it first wins.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, Doug, yeah, I would
have
love
to do
to...
with like the base thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love to do something like that. I really would. Okay, Doug, I'm being realistic here. What I would love to have is like three or four people playing at the same time. What I'm guessing I'm gonna get is one person. It's gonna be me against one person, and I'll get one person come and go. Maybe you know. I get one for an hour or maybe two, if I'm lucky. And then they'll go off and do something else. And then, you know, someone else will come in like another hour or two. And they'll say, you know, let me try it out. You know, and that person will come. Now, you know, if I can get Barry there the whole time, I'd be happy to have Barry there the whole time. Because that definitely would encourage other people to come. That'd be great. But I know Barry wouldn't want to be the whole time either. You know? And the problem with that scenario is that you've got to have at least two or three people on, at least at the very least two, on the track for a race. Because it's really, I agree that the racetrack, oh man, Jeff, poor Jeff. The racetrack one is a fun scenario because basically you're trying to get around the board, and what you're trying to do, it's like Munchkin in the way that Munchkin, you've got a goal of getting all through 10 levels. Now getting to be a 10th level character in Munchkin, the original Munchkin. I'm not talking about any of the like Super Munchkin or anything like this, but 10th level. And but at the same time, you're trying to drag the other players, trying to drag you down and try, you know, they'll throw monsters at you or whatever. They'll do this and they will not to bring you down. And that's what the. Da, 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 da. Come on. There it is. Hey, Jeff.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Sorry for joining late.
That's fine. So, you know, and that's the whole idea of that of the around the track, going around the track, is that you go as fast as possible and you try to beat each other to death and try to be the only person to actually, for the most part, the only person who passes the finish line. You know, I'm just being realistic here. I'm being realistic given the people that are going to be there. You know, we can try to get people from around here, you know, any Federation commander, any Starfleet Battles players that are around here. I'd have to figure out where to hit. Possibly, you know, from the Ashes gaming store right near me. I could maybe put something on the poster about Gamers of Winter and the schedule is going to be played, you know, of and maybe get some people. I'm not sure what kind of gamers they are, to be honest. I'd have to stop by the.
Well, here's the thing. I have.
Yes.
I have not been as good at getting the word out as I have been in the past. And, you know, there's things I can do as far as some advertising goes. I mean, we did fill the hall, which I thought was really nice for the space that we had. Now, as far as, like, getting a bunch of F&E or SFE players out, you know, the question is, putting it onto like the SFB boards. putting it into like Facebook groups, stuff like that. And I literally didn't do that personally this year.
Mm-hmm.
And we still had one person come out, as you said.
Right, right.
Specifically to get a demo of FedCom.
Right.
Because they had played SFB before, but that's hard to get players now.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was thinking is, what about posting on some of those things?
Well, we can try that. Here's my concern, is we're going to have run into the same issue that David Chang himself is running into, which is he's trying to have a one last hurrah of, you know, in-person tournament, you know, a big in-person tournament when it comes to SFB. And he's been posting all over the place. He's been playing, you know, got the SWA mailing list. He's posted on Facebook. He's posted on the discussion board. And I'm assuming also with the FedCom PHP BBS. I'm sure he's posted it there too. And he's not getting that big of a response. And that's my concern.
Yeah, that's because it's a graying game.
Right, exactly.
That's a huge part of it.
Exactly.
And it's a discussion we've had in the past that, you know, the entire board gaming and gaming thing in general, it's kind of a graying thing in some respects. The guys who do Little Wars TV did an episode specifically about how the miniatures wargaming thing is a graying industry. But yet there are new people coming into it, younger people coming into it. And you've seen some of that with FedCom and the occasional post, but it's such a small niche group out of the overall gaming community that it's extremely difficult. And, you know, what they're having with that up in New York is they've got a whole bunch of the diehards that still play on a regular basis, that still get people to play, that teach their kids and so forth and so on. And they've had their tournament going for decades, but for whatever reason, they've decided not to continue with it anymore because I forget if it was turnout. You know, they just weren't continuing it with the convention that they were associated with up there. And that's why I was pushing it with them about coming down to where we're at, because even though they were getting people from all over come into there, where they're at, although it's convenient for a few people, it's probably more convenient for a larger number of people to come down into the Harrisburg-Lancaster area. So, I mean, that's just it. I mean, the cold, hard truth of it is, we can put the word out more, and I think we might get a few people, but I'm not sure if we'll see the kind of, you know, resurgence that we had back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And I definitely from the interest on the Facebook, there's renewed interest in the game at the very least with the Greybeards.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, with that, get some of the younger people involved. Now, the muy importante question for me is, when it comes to on-premise, you know, in life, like, you know, real life gaming, you know, in-person gaming, are people interested in tactical board games, or do they want to play those completely online? I know other games. Yeah, you know, they want to play. You know, they're still willing. They still want to play in person. You know, and not all gaming is gone to the computer. And so, you know, that's always good to see that, at least gaming wise, you know, that we're seeing that there are still people interested, you know, even the younger folks, you know, are interested in playing games in person, and doesn't have to be on the computer. But tactical board games, I like playing them, and as you mentioned, like the mini guys, they're seeing some new folk coming, some younger folk, which is always, that's always good to see. And that's why I'm being realistic here when it comes to getting other people involved. A game is a winner. I'm hoping trying something different. You're trying to actually have a scenario that can be available and run during the whole convention.
One of the biggest issues you run into with groups like this, and it doesn't matter exactly what the interest group is that if your core people don't get to practice what they want to do on a reasonable basis with everybody else, the interest wanes. And that's what you're seeing here, is that people, they're just not that many beat up groups anymore. Granted, you've got a great way of setting aside virtual tabletop time, and it works for a lot of different things, but there's just no real substitution for sitting across the table from somebody, playing something out, having something go incredibly right or incredibly wrong, and have a good laugh and buy beers over, or soda, depending on age, over what happened. It's just one of those things. Too many people have gotten into this trap that if they can do it on the computer with people they never have to worry about ever meeting in real life, then it's fun enough. But I think they're doing themselves a disservice, because I remember the time when we had an active battle group here in the Little Rock area, and it was fun. 2-3 times a month we'd get together and we'd do something or other. Sometimes it'd be a playtest scenario, sometimes it'd be something somebody wrote, sometimes it'd be something out of a captain's log. Who knows? But the thing is that we always look forward to the next happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree, and that's going to be the gotcha overall, and that is having consistent have a basically a play group that you play, Federation Commander, or at least have that as available as something to do, or have and possibly you'll get roped into other games that are hopefully tactical board games, in this case, whether that be World War II or Napoleonic War, what I'm talking about, Napoleon's Wars, that kind of thing.
Miniatures war
game. Well, it doesn't have to be miniatures. Like Tactics 2, which is an old Avalon Hill tactics game, which I actually learned how to play. Oh, jeez. I'm thinking about when I was like 14, because my best friend had a copy, and we played the basic edition. There's an advanced edition of the rules that we never played. We only played the basic edition. But we still had a lot of fun doing that.
will deliver at 1:58 p.m. to the
front. Okay. I'm not going to do this. Sorry, guys.
That's okay, Jeff.
Too many different smart devices not being very smart.
Well, now here's a random off the wall thought.
Okay.
All right.
What if we steal a page from Ken Burnside's book, where he stole a page from somebody else's book, and so forth and so on, and we put out, here's event X that we'll do as a demo event for, say, FedCon, and you throw out cargo prizes you damage shipping up or blow them up, you get the piece of candy that was representing the ship, or maybe been the cargo on his ship, and you have the minis all set up.
Right.
Something like that. One of the things I was thinking about was doing a pirate theme day, possibly at that venue on Labor Day weekend. And, given the overall event kind of a theme, and if we did like a pirate themed event, you could have them run basically pirates and go after each other for their cargo.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever gets the booty gets the chop or something like that.
Uh-huh. Understood.
Just kind of an off the wall thought.
Yeah, of having
but it'd be the
real world prizes tucked in various cargo boxes of freighters is interesting, yeah.
I can actually
see that. You turn around and you get a bunch of prizes and then you set them into various cargo boxes on whoever the host is running their convoy of ships, and then people come in with their raiding forces and try to make off with one of the prizes.
Right.
And the other thing is, a group in Lancaster and a group in York and groups around the area, maybe give them an incentive to come out, like prize support of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Certificate that you won this at event X. And maybe a gift card from ADB or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
If they would part with one.
Right.
But that would be for you to ask, Because there is one thing that's endemic to the area up here. And it's just that it can be kind of insular.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get people to come out once they have a comfy group that they're in.
Right.
They don't want to go out for events that are local. And for the niche group of what we have, do they really even want to go out to the big conventions anymore? I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, I feel little incentive to go anywhere. I mean, but that's just me on budget for me,
right,
which you're quite familiar with, Paul.
Yes, I'm quite familiar
from
with.
Our, deck going to Origins. And, but the only reason that I was going to Origins originally was the Gold Hat Tournament.
Mm-hmm.
With all the support that they had for that. And I think that if ADV had a program similar to that, if they were willing to invest in a program like that, that incentivizes some people to come out, to where you can get a larger and larger group of people, that could help to grow their base a bit. Even if it's as simple as bringing all the people out of the woodwork that play in the area or within a few hours' drive, and those people are playing at the table, and they get seen by everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
At Origins, you got the people to come into the game because they saw the big banner. They saw lots of people playing they saw the familiar Star Trek ships, you know, shapes and designs. They saw the minis. They saw the minis in the breezeway when you were doing demos in the breezeway and would stop and ask to give it a shot,
mm-hmm.
you know. And you also had people come out of the woodwork who had played before, and they saw that people still played it, and that rekindled their interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. You know,
that
takes some support from the company side.
To a certain degree.
Because us just saying, hey, look, doing demos and me listing you as an event, we had one person come out, which is more than the last time or two that we did this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've had people come out here and there over the years, but it's at most been three or four people in the room that were familiar with SFB or FedCom and had played it. And maybe two of them at a time might be playing. Maybe. So, I mean, just the thought of how to get people to come out from around the area, come into the event for a day or two. And mm-hmm. that's where I'm saying something like running a captain's game, it would be something that's outside of the normal scope of what a home group does as a very special event over a few days on a holiday weekend.
Understood.
Now, on Labor Day weekend, it's a little harder because that's a big family travel time weekend.
Right.
But it could be a guinea pig kind of experiment, you know, and repeating it in the winter,
right.
You never know.
The big family holidays are always horrible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the only reason I picked that was least conflict with other conventions.
Mm-hmm.
Because from basically like April through August is convention season and travel season for people going out to them.
Mm-hmm.
We have people in our group that will come out to, they'll basically travel to like most of these conventions or a large number of them. But then we also have people that only come out just for our thing.
Mm-hmm.
So take it for what you will. It's kind of a mixed bag. I mean, if you want something simple, see everybody attached to Starbase thing. You're running the Starbase? Yeah, that's simple. Nobody has to deal with that part. Or if you get enough people interested in it, you could do a Grand Prix or a short scenario like the Lone Wolf thing, or you could do a modified captain's game.
Mm-hmm.
So,
agreed.
But if you throw something that people can commit to like that, maybe we'll get a response. Just go on those boards and say, hey, I'm running this event at that event twice a year, and how many people here would be interested in any of the following? Do a survey. Do a Facebook poll in these different places. So, that's just a thought on my part. So, any of those ideas would be good.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Look, yes, really.
There needs to be some outreach.
Oh, agree. There's, to get the players that currently are playing, yes, there has to be some kind of outreach. I can't believe Gary's here. And waiting for him to show up. And there. Hey, Gary.
Hey there. Is the call already ongoing, or are there any technical difficulties?
Well, we've been talking about basic conventions and doing events at conventions. That's mainly been the topic.
Yeah, we were just going on.
For the evening.
I was just wondering, actually, I don't know if you've already talked about it, but How did the Gamers of Winter go?
Well, overall, it went very well. We packed the room. It was a small room to start with, but we still managed to pack it. And Paul actually had a person come out of the woodwork for to be demoed for Federation Commander, a former SFP player. And it's like our total number for the weekend was like, it was like 55 people. You can see the pictures in the Gamers of Winter page, or Gamers of South Central PA Gaming Convention page. We had 44 on Saturday, and when I originally went in to lease the building, they only had like 32 chairs, so I had to go get more chairs for them. I'm glad I did.
Oh, me too. Because
it's always nice when you end up needing to acquire more facilities.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm looking at this as interim, and we might use it in the summer simply because the summer has always been a smaller attendance. And I was expecting, with pre-registration numbers, I was expecting to basically take a total bath on this, and yet we, felt like dinner's worth of, I bought dinner on Saturday, and that was what I missed my break-even point by. So I'm okay with it as far as that goes. And, we had overall 55 people over the weekend, individuals, not counting me and not counting the staff. Thought I'd throw that out there. So, but okay. I did count you, Paul.
Yes, Gary? What was your question?
Well, Paul, I was actually just wondering, well, it's good to hear that the event went well overall, but did you get a chance to, there was a couple of different books I was mentioning to
yes.
see if you wanted to bring in. I don't know if Barry was going to be there as well.
Boom.
Or if not, did you get a chance to go over any playtest material with Barry as well or no?
Barry wasn't there.
Barry couldn't make
it. Yeah. Because of...
He got hosed over with work.
Yep.
Yeah, they had an all hands on deck thing. He was literally told he had to cancel his vacation plans. Straight up. And that happened.
Huh.
We had several of our regulars who couldn't make it for life reasons. But we had a whole bunch of new people too.
Reality interferes.
Yes, it does.
But it usually, having a job like that usually enables you to have the money to pay for all of the sets.
Well, here's an interesting thing. And I just wanted to throw this out because Paul's already heard this, and maybe some of the rest of you guys might find this amusing. But you remember the whole ongoing open license scandal with D&D?
Yeah, the OGL.
Right. My D&D player told me that I needed to raise the price for the convention, and some of them literally told me that I was under-monetizing them and that they would be happy to pay more as long as the event continued. So, I think we'll be a little stronger and better going on into the future with it. That's just my opinion. I just,
That is an interesting take.
Yeah. Well, it's like this right now. For the cost of the entire convention, it costs less than one day at Origins. And if you came in every day and you bought the buffet from the... We did this at a restaurant, and the restaurant, it was a closed event. The restaurant ran two buffets a day at, and they charged separate and had a discounted price for both. And if you came in and did the discounted price for both and paid for the event, it was still less than, just your entrance into a large convention. And these were guys that go out to like multiple conventions in the year, like Origins, Parks, other places. And they're telling me, charge us more, please. I'm okay. I'm okay with that. Yeah, you know, I will make it so. But that was just me. The other thing that we were talking about was what kind of events to schedule that might bring people out of the woodwork. You know, Grand Prix, Assault on a Starbase, Captain's Game, yada, yada, yada. I think you came in on the tail end of that.
Yeah.
That's all I got if you want to throw something out.
Mm-hmm.
Did I kind of summarize it?
Yeah. Summarize it well.
Well, that's very
good. Oh, and I forgot to mention what kind of one person. Yeah, sorry. Go on.
So I just wanted to ask him, Paul, what kind of games or discussions were you hosting at the event yourself?
I was mainly demo events, Starfleet Battle Force, Starfleet Marines, and Federation Commander. I had like three different times, and only had one person show up for Federation Commander, and that was it.
So, how did the Marines one go?
Well, I was up there by myself, so it didn't go.
Well, here's a question for you. When it comes to either SFB or FedCom or even Call to, well, I guess with Call to Arms, it would be mandatory. But for someone like FedCom or SFB, do you think that the 7,000 scale Shapeways miniatures, like the set, would maybe help promote it a bit more? I mean, of course, you can play most of the games with counters, but in terms of getting new interests like into what's going on, I wonder if maybe having the figures might make things a little bit easier, especially because when you look at the Shapeways miniatures, you don't have to worry so much about making sure that you're gluing the nacelles on and they're not falling off and sort of thing, the way you do with the metal miniatures. Because as long as you don't like drop it on the ground, like the resin usually, in my experience, holds together fairly well.
Yeah, that's excellent.
So I was just wondering.
That's
actually, one other thing as well is if you have a look on Shapeways, there's like a section where they have a number of alternate like things like flight stands and bases and stuff. And one of the things that they actually have is Steve Zamboni, I believe, he actually created a set of 2-centimeter circular base adapters for Call to Arms Starfleet to use with the 7,000 scale miniatures. So it basically went, and it even comes with the 8 directional things that you use for firing arcs in that game.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody was basically playing Call to Arms Starfleet with the 7,000 scale miniatures, they would use centimeters instead of inches, and everything would function the way it would with the bigger miniatures. So in theory, what someone could do is have the same miniatures, but not necessarily glue the circular base adapters to them. So it's the same, like say if somebody shows up at the table and says, I want to do a Starfleet Battle tournament game, or if I want to do like a little kind of like a historical duo, then you just use the hex-based miniatures on the map sheet as is. And then if someone else comes and says, I want to try and see what it's like to move a few ships around in a Call to Arms Starfleet, you could move the hex board to one side, roll out a hexless map or so, like you know, the kind of things that you can have the, I'm forgetting the words, like you just roll them out on the table, but they've got like starfields and stuff on them,
mm-hmm.
but there's no hexes, so you use them for Call to Arms Starfleet. So you could roll that out and then place the hex based miniatures into the adapters, and then introduce that person to a Call to Arms Starfleet with the same miniature. So you're not, the only additional expense that you're paying is to buy the set of 12 or 24 adapters for the same hex, so the same hex time something.
That would be nice. One, I have to learn how to play Call to Arms. Never played. I've never, in all my life, have I ever played hexless game, hexless game, ever. whether you know whether it's you know having played Warhammer or any of the the war games where you've had minis you have all the miniatures and you use those for your units and so forth. I've never played that, and you know I know even before Call to Arms Starfleet. Starfleet Battles did have a hexless system that you could use. Module W, if I recall correctly, because that actually had the what do they call them?
Oh, I vaguely remember that. It had all those weird templates.
The templates.
The turn mode templates.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure those are on Safeways too. So if somebody wants to play,
I've seen them around. But I believe Paul's right. I believe they were originally in a module, and it might well have been Module W. But I remember those from the 90s.
Yeah, me too. That's how I remember that.
Did it echo the Zoc miniature game, basically, way back. Remember that?
What was it again?
Did it echo the Zoc miniatures?
Yeah.
That game. Wow. So I just had an off the wall thought, but
I'm not familiar with that one.
Do you think that? And I think it would be best if you approach them, Paul. Do you think that ADV might be interested in putting out a miniatures pack that you could paint as a convention pack for taking with you? You know, like the Fuller Brushman thing, where they give you a specific set of minis that you sit down with and you set it up as a demo table instead of expecting you to, like, you know, if you don't have them, expecting you to buy them. That you could use for, like, running, say, FedCom demos on a large hex thing. That stuff does attract the eye.
Mm-hmm.
Just a thought.
Oh, I agree. Miniatures definitely attract the eye.
Well, the closest thing to that is on Shapeways. Because the way it works is that each empire that is on Shapeways has a specific artist who basically produces the miniatures for that empire. Although, actually, for the Romulans, it's more picky because I think Will McCallum, because he does the Klingon ships, he does all the KRs. But the Hawks and the Eagles, like the Spiral Hawk and the King Eagle and so forth, are done by Matt Lawson. So if you have a look for there's actually, I'm pretty sure we showed them, these came up before on the podcast, but if you have a look on the Shapeways page, there's a section for tournament minis.
Yes.
And what has been done there is that each artist has basically gathered a group of the tournament cruisers for the empires that they are responsible for. And so it's not quite as seamless as getting the full range you want, but it's the best thing you can do because the software that the designers use, they're not always compatible with each other.
No, that's true.
I don't think that the current models in one can work in the others. So I think this is probably, barring like someone developing a new 3D modeling software that can incorporate them all and still function in terms of printing miniature. I don't know whether that's going to be the next step. But what I think was interesting is that now ADB haven't used this yet, but Shapeways do have a form of material they print called something like high definition something something. I forget the full name, but proper name for it. But it basically, it kind of injects the color into the miniature as it's being printed. So I think, yeah, basically you can create, like, so in theory, as long as you've programmed in the color pattern you want, and like the decals and so forth, you can basically print the miniature to be fully pre-painted, so you don't have to paint it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So in theory, like if you wanted to have a set that had like a Federation heavy cruiser and a Klingon D7 and a Romulan KR and so forth, you could basically have it so that the person buying it has them ready to go, like pre-colored. Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, I don't know how much more expensive that is to do, because even the different materials that usually are available on the Shapeways storefront, the better quality they are, the more expensive they are.
Right.
So it could be that it might be prohibitively expensive to do it in the way that the colors are provided for you. And also, I suppose, that would only really work for Empire sets have fairly uniform color schemes. So, for example, if you offered an Orion pirate ship, you'd probably have to have different color schemes, because there's so many different operators and designs and so forth. But something like, say, a Starfleet ship, they tend to have a fairly uniform paint color scheme. But then you have people asking, well, there's like 30 different cruisers with different NCC numbers in this class, so do you have to basically offer all 30? I mean, like, that might get crazy. Like, that might be prohibitively... then you might basically just say, you know, just buy the decals from Tenetians and Details and put them on the miniature yourself. So I guess there's that kind of, like, drop-off point between being a game player versus being a miniatures collector, and, you know, whether or not the actual painting of the thing is itself part of the hobby that you're using. So I guess there's, like, you know, I mean, it's probably not something that could be solved in one go, but it's just an idea I wanted to put out in case, you know, any part of it sounds like it might work for you.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an interesting idea.
Mm-hmm.
Something along those lines. If the technology develops just a little bit further, and provided the rights can be worked out, which is by no means granted, it would be very interesting to be able to see ADB licensed method by which you can go to a kiosk or something at one of these events, put in the color scheme and the Empire details and whatnot, and get some kind of 3D printed, resin printed souvenir. Maybe nothing more than just a raised relief puck rather than an actual miniature, but the tactile take home things are really big for keeping the newfound people coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if they're Romulan or Orion, or I suppose Osman Marauder players too, they could get two miniatures, because the miniatures that are in smooth, fine detail plastic, the plastic itself is semi-translucent. So you can leave one of the two miniatures unpainted, and that's your cloak ship.
Yeah, that's true.
Good point.
It is kind of neat.
Oh, speaking of takeaways, well, have I been on since I got my most recent Shapeways order? You don't recall me mentioning that before, did you?
I don't think so.
Yeah, so basically, I got a couple of new Shapeways minis, and two of them are actually from the Lesser Magellanic Cloud, and one of them is from Omega. So I don't know if you had a moment to bring it up on the screen. If not, that's okay. But just in passing, even in case anyone would be interested to see what they look like, I haven't tried painting them yet. So now they're still just in the unpainted, smooth, fine detail plastic.
Okay. I assume you, where did you post that? I assume you posted it on the Federation Commander discussion board?
Yes, it's in the miniature section.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the last few posts. There's one picture, there's one post that shows all three ships together. And then I've got individual posts that shows what the ships looks like from the front left, from the aft right, and upside down, so you can see the detail on the bottom.
Okay. Da, 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 da. Okay, I'm trying to... Actually, I bet you I have to go backwards because they got this in opposite order, as in page 3 has the oldest post. Da, 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 da. Okay. Well, I don't know if that's September 2018. That's, I know I've seen that one. And next. Then 2019. And 2021. Da-da-da. I know you've been, you were, oh, there it is. Okay. The trio. Which are translucent. That looks cool. Okay, let me do this. Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da. That is... I think that should do it. No? There. One of these times I'll actually remember what my hotkeys are. Okay, so I'm showing the trio arrivals that arrived at the end of last year. December 31st is when it got when it got the post. And I forget who's the squarish one. Because I know the one in the middle is a Trobriand. Okay. And then the Anine. Okay.
Yeah, so the kind of space shuttle looking one is a strike cruiser from the Badabai Imperium. And if you scroll a bit further down, you can actually see, on the bottom of it, you can see the warp nacelles.
Cool.
There's like a bigger 15-box nacelle in the middle, and then there's two 8-box nacelles on either side.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hexagonal one is a heavy cruiser from the Indian. That's also, they're like a lemur-like people in the LMC. And if you notice, I don't think how clearly you can see it on the pictures, but... The heavy weapons that are on the corners of the Inine heavy cruiser, they're actually set offset at 60-degree firing arcs, because the Inine ships are designed that basically their heavy weapons have they load in a single turn, but they have a cooldown period. So you basically swing in on the oblique and fire two of them, and then you turn off and launch a plasma E torpedo to deter pursuit. And then on the next turn, you swing around and you fire the other half. And then when you turn off again, you fire the other side's plasma E to the tour. And then you kind of like rinse and repeat.
Right.
Whereas the Badabai ship is designed, its heavy weapons are actually mounted just above the warp engines, like on the strut there. And so they're designed to close in and hit you up in person.
Actually, that's a question about the Anine. Which way is front? My guess is where it has those like ridges, that's the back of the ship when it comes to the cells.
The hexagonal kind of bits jutting out the back, they're the impulse engines. That's the bit that faces backwards.
Okay. Cool. And there's the Trobriand Diamond.
And of course. It's actually interesting because each of the Trobriand cruiser variants, you can actually see, because on the ship itself, there's one type of mount that's fit for the implosion bolts, the direct fire weapons. And then further back, there's more kind of like cannon tubes that are used for the seeking torpedoes.
Yeah.
So what Matt Lawson has done is that if you get a bolt cruiser, then you'll see fewer of the cannon mounts and more of the circuitry dots. But then on the other side, if you get the torpedo cruiser, there's more of the cannon mounts mounted on the front and elsewhere on the ship. So it's definitely a good way to distinguish which variant you're using. So.
Cool.
And also, on the prow there, you can actually see, I don't know if you can make it out on the picture or not, but on the prow, just behind the bridge, you can actually see the little kind of like rectangular blocks mm-hmm. that represent the armor belt on the ship.
Oh, okay. Okay. And...
Because unlike a Federation, like old light cruiser, or like a Romulan King Eagle, the armor on a Trobriand ship, it's not woven into the hull. It's actually distinct belts of armor that the Trobriand can either eat or they can take off the ship if they need to make room for like some other system. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I assume that the bridge is that little pip that's on like the boom, you know, the end of the boom section.
Sorry, say that again. The line's a bit choppy there.
I assume the little pip. There's a little bump at the front, at the very top, the very front of the boom. Well, the middle of the square piece, which is, you know, the head of the boom. Boom section. I'm describing it as akin to a Klingon.
Yeah, the Trobriand put their deflector dish underneath the boom, like the section. So it's like if somebody basically combined a Klingon boom with the front of a Hydran, maybe. Like it's got that same kind of like wedgy kind of, you know. Screwdriver kind of look.
Mm-hmm. Definitely looks nice. I can imagine the Baduve, strike cruiser. I can easily see someone using that as like a fighter. In another universe. Or a spaceship.
It's amazing how much...
Yes?
It's amazing how much design philosophy transfers over from one discipline to another. You have something that looks like a fighter, even if it isn't a fighter, people still think, oh, look, it's a fighter.
Agreed. Well... It's classical fighter design. You know, you have the, you know, up front you got like where you have the cockpit, and then you have these big wings behind it. You know.
And that's
a fighter. You know.
Although I suppose because many of the empires in the SFU that do that, they usually do it because their ships are designed to fly in atmospheres or land on planets. So, for example, the Paravian cruiser, it has that kind of like bird-like look, but the ship is meant to be able to land on planets. So, from an atmospheric sense, it sort of makes sense. But on the other hand,
the Badavai,
ironically enough, their ship.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
The Badavai ships, they actually stay in open space, so it's not necessarily tied to any atmospheric performance. It's just kind of the way that their designs kind of turned out. So.
Right. And it's possible previously it was atmospheric, and they just decided to keep the same design. You know, they liked it, so they kept it. They, you know, and that's where the engineers had, you know, learned. You know, when it comes to the designs of the ships, and it's like, yeah, we'll stick with it. You know, wouldn't surprise me. But anyway, it's getting late. It's 10:45 already, and I have to wake up bright and early and get some work done because I'm taking off the day tomorrow. Unfortunately, for personal time off, just because of a friend of mine that. Their wife died, and the funeral's tomorrow, so I'm going to the funeral. So I'm taking the day off. So with that, Gary, it was nice for having you to stop by.
Yep. Yeah. Happy New Year, everybody.
Okay, you have a good night. Doug, always a pleasure to have you around.
Yep. Oh, thank you.
And Jeff, I'm glad you actually were able to show up and, and actually chat for a bit.
Well, you know what it is. Real life interferes.
Oh, agreed, agreed. Especially when your tech doesn't work the way you want it to work.
You know, there's that too.
Okay. Well, you drive safely out there.
I'll do that.
Okay, will do. Okay, bye. So, topic went off the rails. Actually, that wasn't supposed to be the topic for tonight, but well, whatever. We'll go through that probably next week then. But anyhow, so we had a nice little talk about conventions and possible events to get people out there. Obviously, I have to think long and hard about what to do, because there are, we can get out there and say, okay, we're going to have an event. The question is, what kind of events are people looking for? You know, I thought about, the whole idea of a Starbase event is basically get people in as a demo. It's a demo project, and try to get people interested in playing Federation Commander, versus having the event or events in at Gamers of Winter to being a gathering event of Federation Commander Starfleet Battles players. That was a different thing. And also, therefore, you have to focus differently on that. So, anyhow, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.